Since Peter Todd published the Bitcoin white paper in 2008, many great cypherpunks analyzed Satoshi's mediocre C++ code to become true believers in the electronic peer-to-peer cash experiment to separate money from state. Over the years, many cypherpunks have become born-again Bitcoin maximalists, ready to march together, hand-in-hand, to the citadels after hyper-Bitcoinization. One such cypherpunk has consistently stood out from the crowd of his alleged peers. Looking like a giant hairy minion from Despicable Me, he commanded the attention and respect of even the most irreverent audiences in the notoriously boisterous Twitter Spaces arena. Sharing his conviction and his respect for macro, he even captured the allegiance of the most rebellious meme gang known to man, Triple Elite Memes. In the spring of 2024, he shocked the world by becoming the inaugural March Maxi Madness Influencer Tournament champion, defeating Michael Saylor in the Final Four just weeks before he helped organize the world's greatest halving party to date in El Salvador. And he has fought alongside some of the lowest time preference meme warriors who have ever lived in the trenches of Bitcoin Twitter and into our hearts. His bullishness, strength of character, and his never-stop-believing ethos have earned him the admiration of all who transact adversarially on the network. On top of all that, he is also one of 21 million co-hosts for one of the longest-running Bitcoin podcasts in the world, Meme Factory Trademark. He was also had an opportunity to interview titans of industry such as Michael Saylor, Matt O'Dell, and the lovely Lynn Alden, alongside his legendary co-hosts, including Big Sean Harris and Greg. He is the big bird of the Mediterranean, none other than the legendary cypherpunk, Yellow. Yellow, thank you so much for coming on Fuels Behind the Podcast, Bitcoin Podcast. How the hell are you doing today, sir?
What's up, feds? It's great to be here, guys. Love you guys. What an intro. Wow, I gotta take a copy of that and like print it and like put it up in my wall or something. That was great. I feel better.
Is it hard to maintain botsec and prevent from being doxxed when you are a bright yellow, hairy, orange, you know, behemoth?
It's kind of hard. I try my best to do what I do best as that was profound. God damn it. Anyway, I try my best. I don't know about the opposite thing. I'm trying my best also there. But yeah, it's really hard to be the bigger man, you know?
What are your thoughts on the recent price dip in Bitcoin? Is it shaken your confidence?
The price has been dumped? I'm really, yeah.
It is like 83 USDT right now. I don't know what that translates to in Europe.
Price. Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you there, Rod. I don't watch USD. See, I only watch USD Tether. What's on Tether? It's a little bit up. Yeah. It's more, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are on the Tether standard here on the Beauty Podcast.
So
me and the friends guy from Bull Bitcoin love Tether on Liquid.
Are you thinking that you're going to need to bring back your Twitter Spaces to bring the price back?
You know, I have a lot of pressure from plebs to do that. I have now an open agreement. I was backed on the corner from Bob from Stack Chainers. Bob, the guy that was collecting the mannequins. And he made me promise that if we reach 58K on the dump, I have to restart it every day until we reach 100K again. So that's a thing. And also, if that happens, or if that happens also, I have to do something around DSP because I took a big break. I'm kind of bored now, so I have to restart it somehow. You know, maybe in a weekly.
That was going to be my question. You know, a few weeks ago, a month ago or so, it seemed like you were never going to have to do that spaces again. It seemed like we were, you know, the macro analyst told us after 100, you know, in 5, 106, that it was thin air. And we were going to be ripping up 150, 200K. That did not happen. But you did have some time off. What have you been doing? Well, how have you been spending your time? Have you been hitting the beach? Have you been trying to learn to make baklava so maybe you can be as good as Mandrake? Like, what are you doing with your time off?
Yeah, so I hypnotized myself to think that what I did was so difficult that I needed time off it, and by it I mean off Twitter. Which I didn't do, but I kept on lurking with no any remorse or productivity whatsoever on the scope. So I basically wasted time, and I got fatter also. So that's what I did. I did nothing. I did absolutely nothing. It was glorious. But I feel now I have to, you know, get myself together a little bit, started doing memes again. I barely did any memes also, like very few memes. So I gotta get in and grind again.
Is there any people who have an amputation, they have called phantom limbs, where they can feel the arm or leg that's no longer there. When you are at your essence, at the very core of your being, a memer. Where does that creativity go? What happens when you stop making memes? Do you start to have meme dreams? Do you start to have, hallucinate? Like, what happens? Can you walk us through that? Because that seems like an interesting scenario.
Yeah, what happens is you do the same jokes, but with your normie friends and family or everyday people. And every one of those jokes, drops, like doesn't land, right? So it's like basically you live like a life, like feeling that you're like the most like non-funny guy ever, because any kind of reference you try to convey, they don't get it. So that's why I have to come back to the thing that I am at least considered a little bit funny, you know.
Yeah, and
it's all about my ego in there, you know?
Of course. And it's relatively well known that grandmasters of chess can burn multiple thousand calories per chess match because it's such a cerebral intellectual practice. And that's the same with making memes. Making really good memes burns thousands of calories. And it sounds like your lack of being able to create memes has added a few pounds around the waist as well. So you got to burn that off.
Yeah. And also polyester skin doesn't like stretch that much, you know? So I got to be careful about that. Polyester skin marks is a thing for puppets.
I want to get your take on the current climate of the meme gang. So there's a lot of disruption happening. The Twitter meme gangs were very relevant in the 2021 bull market. The 58K gang was very prolific. Bitcoin Kindergarten was around. The Moscow Meetards were...
Meme Factory, of course.
Meme Factory, the Council of Bens. A lot of these guys have fallen off. Bitcoin Kindergarten isn't publishing. The Council of Bens has pretty much disappeared. They're in complete disarray. Ben the Carman joined the Taproot Wizards. Meme Tards, I haven't seen much from them. 58K gang, we're well above 58K. They're still tweeting, but they're not really gaining a lot of traction. It seems like it's meme factory, and that's about it right now. But what's your take on the? Oh, and we can't forget Triple Elite memes and all the conflict that they're experiencing right now. So, what's your take on the meme gang ecosystem? Are there going to be any rising stars, or are we going to see any beefs, conflicts going forward in the future?
That's a bigger discussion that we can have about the ecosystem in general changing. The thing that we love and we knew until now is changing. It's not the same. And it's not like something, like the old series of guys will tell to the new guys as a thing. In my day, things were, no, it's actually changed. You can actually see it. When newbies have Bitcoin and MSTR on their bio, most of the newbies have it. Let's not kid ourselves. You understand that the new guys coming in are not going to bring the same fire that we had about memeing and shitposting and fighting back the good fight, right? You're going to see less fuck the banks, and you're going to see more my fucking thing pumped, whatever that is, Bitcoin wrapped in MSTR strategy leverage thing, right? And we have to, that in fact, that's impacts everything, also like the so-called meme dance we had. Also, some guys, it's normal that they did it one cycle, they did it two cycles, even from the meme factory also. You can see it on the test stream that we're not all there. Like, some had babies, some had to work in order to stack more. So they cannot be there. So it's normal at some to lose some in the Twitter timeline, Labra, we opened the door and we don't know where he is. Like stuff like that happens, And it's natural, but also it's impacted and I would say infected by the general change of the ecosystem, which is more TradeFi guys, more macros stuff, and more PopConf.
Oh, yeah. One of the biggest developments that I think a lot of people still do not necessarily give the credit it deserves, but has definitely absorbed a lot of the Bitcoin maximalists, the people who truly embody that ethos. They've been absorbed into Nostr. And Nostr is, it's not huge. It is, the UX is okay at best. It's kind of hard to find people and to get your relays connected. But as we talked about many, many times on this podcast, the revolution will not have good user experience. And the most cypherpunk, tip of the spear Bitcoiners are going to the places where the user experience is the least evolved, the least pleasant. And Nostr has really taken that. So Bitcoin Twitter, if you want to still say that Bitcoin Twitter even exists, which is hard to say anymore, it's now mostly run by, Tether, the Liquid Tether Alliance, Fred Krueger, and people who they like to use Bitcoin as a way to elevate their platform, but they pump and dump meme coins onto their noob followers almost qu very quickly. And it's very difficult to create a good strength, a good adhesive community when everybody is pumping and dumping each other.
Yeah, I agree. Was that a question?
I guess my question would be, what is, how much have you been involved in Nostr, and is the, are you able to overcome the bad user experience?
Okay, so I have a thing that I don't like to do what the other people tell me to do. And I also double down on that feeling that when you tell me what to do and start to nudge me at some certain direction, I have a thing that I do the opposite. I know it's not very productive. It's kind of destructive most of the times, but at least it's funny. It produces like laughter. So that's a win. So on Aster, I tried many times to push myself to go on Aster and really stay on Aster, but I don't wanna. I don't wanna just be on there. To me, it's more funny for me to start like fucking memeing and shit posting. Like I've thought about it, like even like going buying like a cheap like fucking mobile and download TikTok, or or even fucking Grindr. I don't know. Like there's more apps out there that you can spread the message and viruses, and also you know, yeah. So Naster, I hear you on that. Like I've said it, no, for real now. Like I said it before. If your thing is like just education and hearing about the news and being informed and all that, Nostr is great. You get the signal, pure signal. But if your thing is like my thing, which is like basically riffing on the guys and being a mirror to their shenanigans and their bullshit and, you know, like playing like the role of the Joker, like I cannot do that on Nasser because I agree with most of the guys there. Like I don't find that, so I gotta find there somewhere. So where is that? That's on X. That's less on Reddit because they ban everything. You know, it's like platforms that like that I can find that and react and be the reply guy and actually maybe give my message, alternative message to someone that is reading the replies.
You're
so I hear you, but for me as memers, we have to be everywhere. Not just Nasdaq, not just Twitter, everywhere.
You're here for the fight. You want to be on the front lines of the battleground, and you just don't see Nasdaq as the battleground.
I would thought, let me jump on that. Because I agree with the way you framed it, Richard. Nostr is like the memeing and posting boot camp. It is where you go to boot, you know, it's like if you play Call of Duty, you do the boot camp and you parachute in and, you know, you just build up your points and your experience. And when you're ready, Once you can go viral and trend on Nostr, you're ready to now maybe join a group chat or a meme game on Twitter. But if you just join a Twitter meme game right off the bat, it's like going to prison. You're gonna just join whoever intimidates you the most, whoever you don't want to be dunked on or rate or you know, ratioed by the most. And it might not be the right fit. You have to work up that discipline and that courage and that confidence to be able to handle it. So it's Nostr is a good tool, but for somebody, let's put it this way, for somebody who wins the inaugural March Maxi Madness tournament and beats Michael Saylor in the process, Nostr is just a little too below somebody like Yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yep. I'm fucking awesome. Yeah, I agree. I'm too big for Nostr. We are in agreement.
The relays can't handle all your meat.
Yeah. I like Nostr. I understand what they're doing. I really do. Whenever I really want to educate myself on purely Bitcoin stuff, what the fuck is going on, and I cannot understand it through the nonsense on my Twitter timeline, which is most of the time I'll log in on Nasr, get the info right away, get the technicalities and more like in the technical side, why is that? I'll see the discussion, watch the two sides, and that's it. And that's great for that. But other than that, I really need my fix, my kind of thing, which is being on the trenches, as the kids say.
I really like the idea of Noster being the training ground. So it's kind of like Jack Dorsey and Matt O'Dell's School of the Americas. And I'm not sure, Yellow, if you're familiar with that, but that was a training ground in the United States that the CIA had, where they would train rebels to go fight around the world, specifically in South America. And it was very top secret. I think that's kind of what Noster is. And,
right.
It makes sense. You've already had your training. Can you talk about what it was like for you coming up without any sort of, you know, specific training or guardrails, just trial and error? How did you become one of the world's most prolific memers and the winner of the inaugural 2024 Marx Maxi Madness?
I started memeing and shit posting in a great time back in 2017, 18, and 19, that bear market, that big bear market. I was a shitcoiner back then, and I started learning how to meme and how to shitpost around threads of InvestBro. So I was part of that gang, the InvestBro gang.
So InvestBro was one of your mentors.
He was one of the first, like, kind of like groups that I clicked. Like, even though, like, I clicked around humor and shenanigans and surrealism. And I remember back then we used to have fights on the threads with other people like me that were around InvestBro, but those fights were like becoming more and more like a reply and a meme video with an animation, proper animation. So we started like maiming, making like whole fights, and people like would RT that and quote RT that and write a caption like, this is CT, this is why I love CT and all that. And slowly and steady, I made more and more mistakes around shitcoins. I'm still a fan of that kind of like threads, shitcoin threads, that there's a special kind of like dark humor that you cannot find in the hopeful side of ours that much, that I really miss. And that's why sometimes I also go in the dark places or meme dark stuff, you know, because I miss that kind of like, oh, I fucking lost it again kind of humor, you know, self-deprecating humor. That's where I learned to do whatever this is.
So when people talk about they talk very bullishly about a future hyper Bitcoinization, and they talk about the citadels, et cetera, et cetera. There is a meaningful lack of duality in the future that Bitcoiners imagine. So you talk about, and I think the reason that you are popular and the reason that many of the most popular memers are so adored is because of their ability to find humor and to find irony and appreciate the darkest times of the bear market, of the news cycle, of all of that. And there's too much people preparing for like this perfect future, and they're trying to avoid the darkness. What aspect would you say of Bitcoin the community, other than like that darkness, or maybe you can elaborate on it, do you think is missing? Because you, it seems like you miss some of the camaraderie of the shitcoin world and like being all together and losing your life savings or whatever. Is that a fair assessment? Do you kind of think that there's just a little too much joy or a little too much forced optimism in the Bitcoin side?
Not really, because like in the end, the fucking thing goes up. So in the end, hope prevails. Like at least in the fourth cycle I'm in, right? It's that fucking old video of like one time Bitcoin like crashed to 30 cents and wait, you know, that thing happens again, again, again. So pragmatically, it is hopeful. What I do cringe about is selling that hope, especially through all those podcasts and Breedlove series out there that really will put even like God-like religious kind of like quotation without being funny, obviously, and they'll be serious about it, like, right? They will have that. They will sell it some like, and in the end, they will like give you like even a link. You know, come to my meetup in down in South Africa or something, some America, to my retreat when we're going to center ourselves, kumbaya, our Genesis Black, and ping pong trace route, our hopeful mentality towards a hybrid Bitcoin. Like, they will find something to say, you know?
It sounds like you're concerned that there's a lot of people out there that are getting their hopes up by individuals like Robert Breedlove, that if they listen to his podcast, that they'll get girlfriends. And that's all it's going to take this cycle.
Yeah, you can put it like that, yeah. So, yeah. You know, like, in the end, what I missed about the Sitcoin days and that camaraderie Rod said was at least like be truthful of what it is, you know, it, like as you said, like there's a duality to Bitcoin about everything, and Bitcoin can be the best thing that ever happened in mankind. It's not yet. And let's be honest about it. And it also can be a great experiment that in my goes wrong in the end. We're fighting the good fight not to be, and be truthful and be adapted and truly be used as it meant to be used. Right? That's the fight now. The usage of it. But in the end, like, we have to keep like certain levels, whatever that is about Bitcoin, in check, not overdo it, not oversell it in some aspects, because that control that generates imbalance in narratives, and that's not good. Then you have newbies with MSTR on their bio. Mm-hmm. That's what happened.
Yeah, right. We thought, but I don't know if anybody identifies with this movement, but a lot of us, we thought that we had overcome a huge obstacle when Swan's morning spaces, Cafe Bit, when it went down, when they ceased to do their morning spaces, we thought, all right, finally, this really giant, potentially misleading influence is out of the space. And then right behind it, followed an even worse influence, MicroStrategy, you know, influencers, MicroStrategy spaces, MicroStrategy meme coin obsession. So it's it's be careful about, you know, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And we're always trying to chase out devils, but we never know what's behind it. And some people think that, you know, we're going to chase off the Ordinals crowd, but what would replace it might be Tether on Lightning. And we don't know the effects of that. So it's, we're just constantly trying to chase out devils and scammers and bad influencers, bad actors, but they're always replaced by a more powerful, even more shameless devil. And it's important that, especially now, like spaces, the daily Bitcoin spaces, community or whatever you want to call it, is in disarray. There's hardly any left. Some of them stopped getting USAID funding. There's a lot less feds on there, but there needs to be a spaces signal. And that is why it's very encouraging to hear that you're thinking of making a comeback.
Yeah. In the end, I kind of like what I do, you know, around Twitter. When it comes to DSB, like, I was really struggling in the end to finish that thing, and it's over. But as I progressed without doing it, I found myself that I had a fucking great way to express whatever I was thinking on whatever was happening around Bitcoin. And it was so immediate, and it was so me that I kind of missed it. I didn't know what I had at some point that I actually, for some reason, could do it every day, play the song every day like a fucking Pavlov dog, and have people actually sing every day and listen to whatever fucking ramblings I had to say about one thing or the other thing or whatever was happening. And the best thing that happened was in Salvador, that actual people came from Australia and Canada and whatever, and they told me one of the main reasons they came is, other than the party in El Salvador, see El Salvador, was to experience DSB live. We did that live. Like, it's so funny. It's such a niche Bitcoin, internet, Twitter kind of thing, which is like, it's surreal. It's like, it's so, like, you cannot actually pinpoint why it was what it was. Yeah. And at some aspect, it has to come back. Because it does good to me too. It does good to me too.
Yeah, I think that moment in El Salvador will be written about in history books. Like, when you think of American history, there are moments like the Battle of Bunker Hill, where one of the officers told his men to wait to shoot until they see the whites of his eyes. And the Don't Stop Believing live event in El Salvador, the Having Party, was really a shot across the bow to the fiat bankers, to the politicians that want to restrict people's ability to transact adversarially. It was one of those moments that was really special. And I think it's the burden falls onto us to make sure moments like that are included in the history books, as Bitcoin podcasters, as the winners, as the ones writing the history. But even though Bitcoin has already won, there's still kind of a battle over determining what goes in the history books. And we want to make sure that events like that aren't overshadowed by things like Michael Saylor's Bitcoin for Corporations event. Because I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to attempt to rewrite history in a way that doesn't really validate the role that memers have played in shaping history. I'm curious, What do you think the best strategy is to deter? Like, do we need to make an alliance with the Jews who write all the history books, or do we just need to podcast more? Like, how do we ensure things like that are taught to children in the future?
Ah, it's a good question. Like, a kind of like, maybe a denial of service kind of attack on some kind of like a centralized server.
I think like the answer,
like Nostr and its relay is gonna help out there. I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
I think the answer is
that Jack Dorsey should have some kind of connections around that for sure.
I think the answer is once you're ready, once you are able to be that, really, it's like people who do a duel in like the old Western American movies and they pull their gun out and they fire their six shooter and they. You become that as a memer when somebody throws, a scenario or a dunk on you, and you can turn right back around and ratio them. I think the answer is metaphorically we stand outside of, in 2020, right when this huge onboarding of new Bitcoiners came on during COVID and the Bitcoin podcast explosion, they waited outside, so to speak, like the Pop podcast. Waiting room or the Breedlove podcast, and all the people that came flooding out of there sharing the pot memes and the Breedlove memes, and we started memeing back at them and making them self-reflect about how foolish and ridiculous they looked. And I think continuing to stand outside those institutions of fiat control that are trying to dominate the Bitcoin narrative and standing outside there, and when they walk out confident that they're conquering the world, you just drop a meme on them that ends their whole career.
Yeah. I was, for some reason, the other day, I was thinking that it would be great if I was doxxed, because then I could do content that I can't do now. One of the content I really want to recreate is the Karpelis, Where Is My Money scene from Mt. Gox days. But I want to do it outside MicroStrategy's headquarters. So, I think that would be extremely funny, like have a guy with a sign, Sailor, Where Is My Money, with red paint on a white board, and I pretend to be Fat Sailor with an umbrella and a coffee trying to get inside the office, and the guy won't let me. And I'm so, yeah, maybe we need like that kind of like a big meme.
I've been told one of the best ways to infiltrate MicroStrategy is through Grindr profiles, actually.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll talk to Labra. He's an expert on that.
I've talked to many Bitcoin podcasters that have had Michael Saylor on, and they've almost universally told me that he doesn't respond to Twitter DMs or emails or things like that, but he does respond to you when you match with him on Grindr, and that's the best way to get him on your podcast.
I used to get responses, and lately, like 2 years now, the best thing I got was like a thumbs up on a comment I did on a DM. But like, yeah, I understand, because like, I crashed his party, 100K party. I crashed it. He threw me out. I don't know if you guys saw that. Yeah, threw me out.
Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, I documented everything on a series of quotes. I jumped the fence. I saw what was happening around. I took pictures and made tweets about it. I left my gum inside one of his like that ships he had in the background. That ship he has, the wooden one. My gum is like inside a captain's quarters. Yeah, and in the end he got me, and he, I have a video of him throwing me out. I didn't even got like a Red Bull vodka that I asked. That's what I wanted. And yeah, he threw me out in the end. And
that's crazy because he came on your podcast. You hosted him. You were a gracious host when he came on the Meme Factory, and he turns around once he gets so big that he doesn't need the support of Bitcoin podcasters anymore. He just tosses you out of the party. That's you hate to see that.
Yeah. Oh, now he's like, oh, you're the guys that created Laser Eyes. Yeah, that's mine now. I don't need you guys. That's mine. You know? And it's sad.
Well, that puts you in the company of some pretty elite Bitcoiners. So I don't know if you do this, but Dennis Porter got thrown out of the last Bitcoin Magazine conference. I'm curious. So I'm shocked for two reasons. I wonder if there's a bit of jealousy here that Saylor was upset that you beat him in the tournament last year, if that was part of the motivation of throwing you out. I'm surprised you weren't invited in the first place and that you had to sneak in. What do you think? Yeah, tell us about that interaction. What was the exchange? What did it look like? Was there any clarity, regulatory clarity offered on his reasoning for tossing you or not inviting you?
Yeah, I think you're onto something, because as he was throwing me out, he started shouting stuff like, get out of here, you smelly cat, yellow cat, I'm a dog person, stuff like that. And I was like, what is he on about? And I remember in the tournament we did and I won, the first thing he replied to me is like, don't underestimate the power of a yellow cat. He made me a cat. I wasn't a cat before. So now I'm, to everyone on his army, I'm a fucking cat for some reason, you know? I'm a puppet. I'm not a cat. I don't identify as a cat. But now, all those guys, their reality is that I'm a cat.
Yeah, I think
so. I think it started there, the feud. You might be right.
I think that's code. I think that I think Saylor just doesn't like pussy, and so he. But I have to get out of here pretty soon. So Richard and you are gonna close this one out. But I did have one more question before I go, and we have not been able to speak with anybody on this podcast who has had a chance to sit down and interview the lovely Lynn Alden for their Bitcoin podcast. And I'm just curious, what was that experience like? And what was the glow that you felt afterwards? And just being able to just sit there and podcast with the greatest, hottest macro influencer, in my opinion, that's ever lived. Can you recount that? Like, how was that experience for you?
I was anxious. It was like I was running a fever. I was like, oh my God, I cannot believe. Like for people like here, in the ancient times here in Greece, we studied wars. You know, like mainland Greece, the Greeks visited the Trojans. And beautiful Helen, you know, like we studied wars about stuff like that. And she was amazing. She was amazing. She is hot also. Like, you are lying if you don't think that if she has your babies will become masterminds of the universe without the brilliance of yours, you know? Like, you do think about stuff like that. And, yeah, but also she was cool. That was also, like, she was cool. She knew her memes. And I also think she knows more than she pretends to know. You know, like, definitely she has like an alt account out there, like in the with the plebs and all that. Like she knows her stuff for sure. Yeah, she was awesome.
She could awesome. Be, she could be secretly a memer. Well, yeah, I'll finish this out with the yellow. So, on the topic of Greece, before we get into the Fountain Boost, I'm curious, how prevalent is Greek mythology today? I know Christian Orthodoxy is very popular in Greece. The Greek Orthodox Church is very predominant, but how prevalent is kind of Greek mythology, the pagan roots, and who's your favorite Greek god?
Oh, favorite Greek god. I kind of like Apollo for some reason. Apollo like was my thing.
Yeah, I would say Apollo's mine as well.
Yeah, there's like an elegance to and brilliance to him, to his whole thing. And as it comes from, like, it's everywhere, man. Like, even like there's a struggle. Like, there's a saying here that the Greeks were one of the first to become Christians, but they always remembered and hated that fact in their psyche, in their archetypes. Like, they hold on to that kind of, like, switch in their religion as a thing that they don't really want it to happen. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can see that struggle in everyday modern Greek, because he can be really, really respectful and Christian-like and try to do the good Christian thing and go to church and all that. But if he gets like road rage, the first thing we do is we swear your Virgin Mary or your Christ. Not many language or people swear. We have a swear in Greece that actually translated to fuck your Virgin Mary or fuck your Christ. So, and we say that like fucking nothing, you know, like it's like a lot of people, it's like that the first thing that they will do. And some people say and argue that it's because like we did become Christians, but like in our genes, we're still based on the ancient Greek world, which it was what it was, right? And you cannot argue with that also, because like it's everywhere. Like wherever you look, you're gonna find a church and an ancient temple. And most of the times, the church, the Orthodox church, is built on top of the ancient temple. It's built with the marbles. You can actually see that, like in the foundation, they took the ancient marbles of the ancient Poseidon temple, let's say, and they built the church of like whatever saint it is, like so. It's like a continuation. It was a struggle. I don't know. It's everywhere, I would say. Ancient Greek Greece is like everywhere here. Like you can find it, even though many people want to deny that, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I found that to be the case in a lot of cultures around the world. So up in certain parts of Europe, Nordic mythology is still very prevalent, and it's kind of morphed with Christianity, which is generally the predominant religion. I would say the same for South America. You go to Peru, you see a lot of Christian churches built on top of Incan temples, and the two religions have morphed, but there's still an undercurrent of the religion, and I would agree with you that there's almost a genetic trait or memory that leads people to still, you know, believe in what they believe. And this is one of the reasons why it's so important as Bitcoiners to propagate children. So yeah, that in the future, not everybody's just an ETF and MicroStrategy holder. Our children are going to have that genetic memory of being awesome memers, of holding spot Bitcoin, of transacting adversarially. And I don't think it's ever going to get beaten.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. I see the connection. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well, thanks for explaining that. Before we go into the Fountain Boost, so this is something we do with our guest every week. I have two questions that I asked every guest before we read our Fountain Boost. So the first question I have for you is, did you listen to the last episode of Behind the Podcast?
Your episode? Not yet.
Okay.
I do it in the weekends. Yeah.
Hell yeah. The second question I have for you is, are you Jewish?
No.
Okay. So it seems like we've had a little bit of run of non-Jews on the show. So it's probably time to get another Jew on the show. I just...
What was the last one, the last Jewish guy that you had?
Ooh, let's look. Let's see. Broken Ruler was not a Jew. Frank Corvo was not a Jew. Barn Miner was not a Jew. So we'd have to go all the way back to Mike from High Hash Rate on January 23rd.
No.
I think it's an important thing. Like, you know, as somebody, as a journalist, as somebody that works in media, there's this constant challenge where you need the Jews, right? You need them because they're the best at the media. But at a certain point, you don't want oversaturation, overrepresentation of Jews. So it's kind of, I wouldn't quite, I'm against DEI. And one of the reasons why I'm against DEI is we've seen it have catastrophic impacts in Hollywood. We've seen since they started trying to take the Jews out of Hollywood, it's just a train wreck. So we know we can't get rid of them. We have to learn how to live with them. But yeah.
Sorry.
Enough about the Jews. I'm a fan of the Jews.
You like them?
Yeah, I like the Jews. Jews are cool.
They're okay.
Some Jews kind of suck. You know what I mean? but there's a lot of good people on both sides, I would say.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so the last episode we did was called Fix the World, One Bitcoin Podcast at a Time with the Broken Ruler. Our first boost from our good friend Fundamentals, who is a Jew, actually, he's one of the good Jews, says, Boomer should be a reoccurring guest. He's got a lot more behind the podcast in him. Great hour. So on the show, we discussed quite a few things. We discussed the potential of reuniting Korea through Bitcoin podcast. So we think the best way for Korea to be reunited is for both sides to set up a studio at the 38th parallel and just start recording regular Bitcoin podcasts. Kind of curious on your thoughts of that.
Yeah. Like inside that small space they had, right? That room that is like separated, right?
Yep.
Or do you think a podcast with a more like outside vibe, like nature vibe, like the part where Trump asked Kim Jong-un if it's okay to step in? You remember that? He's like, yeah, please, come in. Maybe there. That would be a great place.
I think one of the dangers of doing the podcast outdoors. So North Korea has this problem, right, where their population's so orange-pilled. And at a certain point when you're orange-pilled, you want to go and teach other people about Bitcoin. So they want to escape into China. They want to escape into South Korea. They know South Korea doesn't have as good Bitcoin podcasts. And North Korea and the Kim dynasty has taken the stance that they want a head start, right? They've been a first mover on having a nation state strategic reserve. They were the first country in the world to do it.
Oh, yeah.
They don't want their population getting out and teaching the rest of the world about Bitcoin before they can get to the point where they amass enough Bitcoin. So I think it'd be distracting to have a podcast outdoors where they're shooting their citizens trying to go orange pill the rest of the world.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if you know this, but Kim is doing the reverse Bukele right now. Have you heard about this? You know about this?
Well, explain what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, so Kim is doing the reverse Bukele where basically the whole country is like Bukele's like prisons, Chinese-funded prisons, right? And he makes enclosed camp-like, prison-like areas inside the country where you can like have a normal like all Bitcoin Western kind of life. You know, it's like the, it's like a reverse thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's trying to like try to market it somehow, because it's pretty easy to say, you know, oh, come to my country, like look at this and that and this and the sea and all that. Bitcoin will go for that. Like everyone will go for that. But like, it's another thing to say like, okay, don't look outside. Don't look here or that. Just go to that facility and have fun inside in a closed space, you know? You sell it. It's like saying, come to my country and I'll enclose you in like a kind of like Bitcoin water world, you know? How do you sell that? It's a kind of difficult.
Yep. I think the rest of the world is just not ready for that Juche Citadel lifestyle that North Korea offers. So on the topic of Bukele, you were part of a prolific meme gang. When you threw the 100K party, were you afraid of potentially getting thrown in prison for your affiliation with Meme Factory?
The Happy Party, yeah. It was one of my best landing jokes that I did when I did DSB Live. The one was Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert was on, and they were off the stage, and I take the mic and I say, Max Kaiser, everybody, he did this and that. How great of a guy. Thanks, Max, for opening up for me. that landed a few laughs. And the other one was I was introducing myself, and I was like something like the joke was something like, I'm part of the Meme Factory gang, and like, and I stopped myself being all like anxious, because also that there was a minister there, in a talk in a previous talk in the States, and it was like someone from the government, and was like, oh, is that guy like? Did he leave? Did the minister leave? Did he hear me? It's a meme gang, sir. It's not a real gang. So no tattoos here. So, you know, other than joking out, like I didn't find myself in any kind of real problem. No. But it was funny to comment.
I think the thing you have going for you is it would be a public relations nightmare for the country if one of the most notorious meme gang members was imprisoned in the country.
Yeah.
Our next boost is from Pies for 1,000 sat or 5,000 sats. Big boost from Pies. By far the greatest interview and the greatest podcast I've ever listened to. LFG, Mushroom, 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 Strong Arm, Strong Arm, Strong Arm. Hashtag 40HPW. Well, Pies, that might have been the greatest podcast until this one. We'll have to see. We'll have to see what the fans say. What are your thoughts, Yellow, on this 40 HPW meme?
Let's see it.
It's
is there something to see? Oh, in general?
Yep.
Oh, okay. It's okay. I don't know. I haven't actually, as I said to you guys, I have to get back to memeing. I haven't been actually memeing that a lot lately. Me getting fatter all the time, you know?
I need
a break.
You need a vacation. You're kind of on sabbatical right now, so it sounds like you're not listening.
I'm in hiatus, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You did about 8 hours, or sorry, 8 years straight, 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts a week, and now you're giving your ears a little bit of a break. You got some cauliflower on your ears. You want some time without your headphones on your head.
True. I also have to. I don't know what's your guys' deal is like. I know you joke around like about the podcast and all that and sponsors and all that, but like I feel like you put a lot of work to your stuff, and that makes me think that you love your stuff, doing your stuff, your content. So that makes me think that you're serious enough for it, even though you're joking around it. I get it, but I'm similar to that, and I want to take my thing to the next level. I have a few ideas with Craig, like a new series with Craig. It's not a podcast, it's something completely different. But when I say I'm on a break, on hiatus, it's also like finally I have some time to figure out some real life stuff and get my things together so I can have the ability to make the new content, because the new content is gonna need more time, more of my real time, you know, like I cannot be in both worlds at the same time as I was in the Bitcoin world and fiat world, you know.
Yep. You're an artist.
At some point, you got to choose.
When you're an artist, you need time to recharge. You can't just mass produce content at a high level. This is what it sounds like.
Yeah. And also, shout out to the newbies. Like, even if most of you guys haven't figured it out yet, you might have MSTR on your bio, as we said before, but like, I'm still waiting for the new generation to come in, man, to really produce stuff and make city memes and shit posts and whatever it is. Like, I'm waiting for the new guys to fill in the gaps, because I feel like we need it.
We need a new generation of meme gangs to come to the surface and pick up the rifles of those who laid theirs down.
Yep.
Well, let me blast through the rest of these boosts. Run Dance Bitcoin 3000 Sats says, "This NPR segment is incredible. I never thought I would care so much about baking vegan cookies. Cookie, wink, wink." Interesting. I'll have to go back and listen to the NPR segment. I actually can't remember what it was. Pies again, 420 sats, LFG, hashtag 40 HPW. Pies again, 420 sats, hashtag HPW, 40 HPW. Pink Monkey, looks like there was a double boost on accident, says, "You either die a podcaster or live long enough to become a YouTuber." We'll see if that changes here pretty soon. I know Rumble is rolling full steam ahead. They're ahead of YouTube. They've integrated USDT into their platform. So maybe it would be better said, you either die a podcaster or live long enough to become a Rumbler. Boomer 100 sat, or sorry, this is Business Cat 100 sats. good friend Business Cat, host of the, why am I blanking on the name of it? It's Rock Paper Bitcoin. Boomer, I'm going to buy you a Glock once you live in the under the Second Amendment. Maybe one for Goomba too. Yeah. This is an interesting topic. So Canada is looking to become America's 51st state, and they're going to get their gun rights back. So there's kind of a question of whether American Bitcoiners should be saving up to give all of our friends up north in the global north firearms.
Sure. Yeah. That's a blast.
So what's the status of firearms in Greece?
You gotta have a permit. You gotta have like a shotgun type of like gun, which is for hunting. Like basically, you can have a gun pretty easily. Like with a hunting license, and those licenses are like provided pretty easily. But also, you can have like a proper like Beretta or a Glock with a license again, which takes a little bit more time. But if you have the right connections, you can have that also. Of course, you're not allowed to open like carry like in the public like that. Like you have to have it like inside a box and all that, but you can have your gun. Other than that, if you're from Crete, it's that big island in the south of Greece, which is pretty autonomous. It's big enough to be a self-sustained island, and the Cretans are considered like great warriors, always were from ancient times. Those guys there still have the ethic like framework of the vendetta. That's how it's called, vendetta, which means basically an eye for an eye. A guy might kill another guy in the street if he finds out that that guy is from a family, and two generations back, that family did something bad to his family. So that burden of like retaliation carries on to the next generation. It's called vendetta. Like one of the few areas that have that kind of thing is like Crete and South Italy, Sicily. And those guys are followed with guns. Like those guys, like you go to, like they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're everywhere, and nobody can do anything about it, because if you saw like Hodronot tweets on the summer that he went to Crete, I told him, as much higher you go up the mountain, the signs in the road signs become more and more with more bullets in the road signs, because everyone uses it for target practice. Like as much as you go to the touristy areas, less bullets in the road signs. So don't. Yeah,
we do that in the United States too, actually.
Huh?
Well, we use speed limit signs for target practice. You know, you're driving down the road late at night on the highway. You're drunk.
Yeah.
If you can drive drunk safely and hit a speed limit sign going 120 miles an hour down the highway, you're going to be pretty proficient when it comes to your self-defense, essentially. Like, you know, you're fed. Yeah. A lot of these new cars are putting cameras in it so that your FBI agent can watch you on it. So they've got the audio, they've got the video, essentially a live stream into an NSA data center of you driving drunk and shooting targets. They're not going to be sending the ATF to your house to kill your dog. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. The the last time the police sent any kind of like manpower to one of those villages up in the mountains of Crete was like 10 years ago when there was a battle and they retreated. So those villages up there, there are like basically autonomous, like not a lot of people. Only the mailman goes from the government side. Let's put it like that way.
Yeah. I know there's a lot of areas around the world that we call it blood feuds. So there's a very famous one in Texas, that the Hatfields and McCoys. And then I know Albania has some pretty epic blood feuds as well.
Albanians have also Sicilians and Cretans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blood feuds. It's like, it comes from like ancient times, that kind of like ethic framework, you know?
Yeah. I mean, most of Americans, they've kind of been domesticated. So one way this has happened is through social media. So on Facebook years ago, they introduced something called the Poke. And the Poke was kind of like a blood feud, essentially, where you don't want to be the last one.
when you had to poke back all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Or another example of this is Snapchat streaks, where if you don't keep the streak going, then you essentially lose the blood feud. So these tools are used to domesticate us, whereas, you know, if you a good portion of your life is built around trying to kill a member of another family in an act of revenge, you know, you're always going to be prepared. You're going to be uncomfortable. You're going to be ready to roll. You're going to be stacking non-KYC guns and ammunition. You're going to be, there's more of a need to transact adversarially, 100%.
But what would be the equivalent for our thing? Like spamming one sat on your node or something?
Well, on Oster, there's the this new trend called 40 good mornings. So if you post good morning, somebody replies and said good morning, you have to go over to their profile and post good morning on theirs, or continue it on somewhere else.
So in the end of the day, there's like a whole fucking miracle tree of like combinations of good mornings. Yeah, I see.
There's probably hundreds of thousands of good mornings every day on Oster. It's incredible.
It's 60% of the volume. Yeah.
Well, the last two boosts I have for the show, BTC on board, 200 sats, fire, lightning. Thank you, BTC on board. And then Anonymous for 100 sats says, I am currently in labor and even I have to go get my podcast hours in. Well,
hell yeah.
Congratulations. Keep on having kids. I mean, I can't think of like anything more special for your child, bringing them into this world, than you listening to a Bitcoin podcast and them getting to experience that as they're in their first moments alive outside of the womb.
Oh, yeah. You make fucking chads like Becca's Luca. That kind of child. Winners.
100%. Well, Yellow, before we stop recording, you got any closing thoughts, anything you want to share with our audience? Sounds like you got some big things on the horizon that you sort of made an announcement of an announcement, it seems like, on the show.
Breaking news. What could I say? I don't know, man. I don't want to say anything, to be honest, because like kind of enjoying lately also, my new attitude I have, which is fence sitting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm embracing sitting in the fence like a cat. Taylor told me I am. So for now, I'm on my fence, taking both sides of every drama, of every shit post, of every kind of like conflict out there in my timeline, and I just laugh about it. As you said, it might be my way of like recharging and actually accumulating and then having something ready to say to the people. Because for now, I'm in the phase of like, okay, let's just like lurk around and chill a little bit. To all the plebs out there, you know what I say in every fucking DSB? It still stands. Stack sats, hold on your keys. It's not that complicated. That's it.
Well, thank you very much, Yellow, for coming on the show. This is Richard Greaser signing off.